I just want somebody to die for. Die for. I just want somebody to die for.
Does that scare you?
I don't want to be alone.
WFNP Rosendale.
This is WFNP 88.7 Rosendale. Welcome to Curiosities of the Cosmos. I'm your host, Allison Chenoweth. Today I've brought on Joe Scully to talk about sociology and social sciences.
Welcome to Curiosities of the Cosmos with Allison Shenneman. My guest today is Joseph Scully, a senior majoring in sociology with a concentration in human services. He assisted with electronic bike safety research for the Department of New York City Transportation through Hunter College, and he is currently wrapping up his third internship through his human services concentration and is an aspiring licensed clinical social work researcher. Joe, thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, thank you for having me again. It's a pleasure being back.
Yes, welcome back. So for our listeners, Joseph and I have worked on a staff together on campus. We're good friends. I'm very excited to have him back on the show. If you missed our first episode together, that's episode 2 of the podcast, and this is already like 11 or something.
Wow.
So yeah, we've been around. But yeah, I'm really excited to have him on again. Our first episode is like one of my favorites. I love that one. So thank you for coming back on.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So first, as per your request.
I was very adamant about this one. So.
Yeah. And I loved that you came to me with this idea, because I don't even know if I think I had just invited you back on, where I was like, yes, mm-hmm. for sure. We're repeating this. Like, we need this back. Yes. Where you had said, like, could we please do a segment on this?
Yeah.
And I'm going to be real with you. I've been up in the air about what this was going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to be very intentional about the approach to this on the show. So for our listeners, we're going to do a segment on... our last episode and one of the like short form pieces that I posted about it. So this show gets the most traction through the short form content, just because that is, I think, the type of media that is most heavily consumed nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to prioritize making sure that those little snippets really show off what I feel is like the core of this show, so that people who are interested will come listen to the full episodes. And so I tend to try to lean into like the fun fact sections, things like that. And so I posted a short on YouTube about...
Insert clip here.
about how sharks have been around for longer than trees have, which is a true fact mm-hmm. for people at home. And feels like one of those fun facts that's, like, too absurd to be true. But it is true.
No, it is. And
so...
I'll look it up after.
You said I gotta verify this. And so it's interesting to me. I don't know. There's so much I want to talk about it. And I think originally we were thinking, wouldn't it just be funny to read them and to be like, look at all of the crazy things that people say online. And as much as I think that would be funny, I think mm-hmm. if you want to go see the comments, you can go to the clip. Insert clip here. but I think that what I want to do on the show is not address some of the things that were said, because some of it was just like silly people being silly. Some of it was like borderline misogyny.
Some of it was straight up conspiracy theory.
And a lot of it was straight up conspiracy theory. And so I don't personally want to highlight that on the show. And so I'm not going to give that a platform. Mm-hmm. But it does spark a lot of really interesting conversations, I feel. So I'm interested in your thoughts on specifically this one question that's kind of been, I don't know if I would say bugging me, but this question that's been like following me through the duration of trying to do this show. And as I find fun facts to put on segments, I am very meticulous about making sure that they're good fun facts, they're interesting, that people don't tend to know them, that there's audiences out there that would like to hear them, and primarily that they're true. And so I want to make sure that all of the times that I present a fun fact on the show, that they're accurate. And so I guess I'm just interested in your thoughts on where, like, what the place is for fun facts in a culture and society that is so skeptical of science. Or is there a place for fun facts?
Well, I personally, I think they're definitely should be. There's a reason why they're supposed to be fun. It's in the title, Fun Facts. You know, but I feel like fun facts, especially science-related ones, are so short and simple. And they're like little things where it's like, oh, like helium like can reverse the effects of gravity. And somebody can easily go, okay, how? like there's right. like, it obviously makes so much sense. But they're so, like, short and compact. They don't go into detail because it's supposed to just be a fun fact. You're not supposed to, like, learn all about it. You're learning something, but you're not going into the whole entire process about how helium reverses the effects of gravity.
Right.
So people can easily be like, all right, that can be true. But, hey, who says it is? Like,
yeah.
And, like, you know, talking about the first episode that was on here, like the fun fact about sharks, like I feel like even though it was a fun fact, we kind of did dive into it still.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like I just found it interesting to read the comments and be like, we did explain, or not we, you did at least explain the process about how it was like a thing,
right?
And it just, like, it was like, oh, that's so not true. Or, like,
right.
Or it was like, what type of classes are you taking? Like,
yeah, I was like, go back and study.
Yeah,
and
I'm like, okay.
So I'm actually in college to do that.
Funny fact. Fun fact. But, yeah, so, like, you know, I actually brought a fun fact of my own.
Okay.
Know, if I can share.
Yeah, I'm a little scared.
Yeah, really sad fact, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I don't want to, like put a downer on the mood or anything, but
okay. No laughing.
Yeah, it's about sharks too.
Okay.
So really sad fact. Sharks are not able to watch Sweeney Todd. And some of you guys might not believe that. But I did see that on a very popular social media site the other day after we had the shark conversation about facts.
So how do you know that that's true though? Just because it was on social media, Joe?
Yeah. I guess that gets into our topic a little bit, actually.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I'm so torn on how to feel about fun facts in media and in trying to communicate science. So I've done planetarium shows on campus, and I actually just did my last one, which was like, yeah, quite a moment for me. And as a part of the show, I try to just do almost a highlight reel of here's a fun fact, here's a little bit of explanation. Mm-hmm. Here's the fun fact, here's a little bit of explanation. Because I like to think that when you start with the fun fact, you've got somebody's attention and you can keep it hopefully long enough to get through a brief explanation. And so on the show, when we do our fun fact section, I always start by being like, here's this crazy thing, cue reaction, now let me explain it a little.
Yeah.
Because I don't just want to be like, here's this fun fact, isn't that crazy? Here's
Let's
another.
Move on.
Yeah, exactly. And so I've had people come up to me who also present shows, and, mm-hmm. and we're all learning, right? That's the point of being in school. I think beyond just being in school, it's an important thing to do in your life, to be a lifelong learner. And so we're all learning, and we're all taking things from one another and finding the things that we like and building the little mosaic that is ourselves by yeah. taking these pieces that we like from what other people are doing. And I've had people come up to me who also present shows whom I admire their shows greatly. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they do wonderful shows, who ask me how I can fit so much information into such a short show for my planetarium shows. And to me, the answer really is that I don't linger on so many of the details mm-hmm. of the how. I say the what, I say a little bit of the why, and then I kind of let people do their own research looking into it. If you don't trust it, look it up.
Yeah.
Learn more about it, right? Mm-hmm. If you find out that it's not true, come tell me, yeah. right? Like, I want to yeah. know. And so I feel like a lot of what I have learned in class is the what, the why, the how, all of mm-hmm. that. And I just feel like people don't care so much about that if mm-hmm. if you're a trusted enough source. So, for example, like, I'll throw out Hank Green, mm. Who I feel like is a great example of somebody who throws out facts that are fun, that are short, that have brief amounts of explanation that people really trust. He yeah. has this, like, everybody trusts that he is saying things that are true, and therefore rarely does he ever get, like, called out for something that's not true, and rarely do people think of him as an unreliable mm-hmm. Scientist and communicator. And so his platform and his position really, like, astonishes me, because I just feel like without him filling that gap, I can't imagine that there really would be a place for much of that mm-hmm. now. Because I feel like fun facts do get met with either so much skepticism or sometimes just a disinterest in learning more. So I guess I'm just curious, like, I know I just said a lot of things. I'm curious what you're thinking about, like the science communication side of things. How do we reach an audience? Why is somebody like Hank Green maybe so successful at mm-hmm. doing what he does? What is it that makes those narrators reliable in that
yeah.
way?
Well, it's actually quite funny. I'm writing a paper at the moment based off of communication mm-hmm. and popular culture, and how does factual information or popular media or resources influence, like, societal thinking, and like, what do people just immediately take as reliable sources? And it has to do with people like Hank Green, right? Like,
right.
who are, like, basically working their way up to become that reliable source to people. Where if I was to read something on the internet that they said, you know, like, I would go, oh, that's so cool. Like,
right.
great. I don't have to look into that anymore.
Right.
Fact. but, you know, I feel like that's the issue with, like, lots of, like, societal, like, research now. It's like, many people don't think they have to actually look into things anymore, no matter where they get it. Like, you can still read it in the book and want to look it up. Like,
right.
Because no matter where it's published, where it's from, where you receive it, it's still something that should be questioned and dived into a little bit more. It's all about critical thinking.
Totally.
I think that also has to do with, like, science research as well, and, like, science facts. Like, science is all about research and analysis. Like, if you're not going to analyze this stuff yourself, like, are you going to actually get a deeper understanding of it? And I feel like that's what prepares us in, like, high school and college of, like, doing, I don't know, like, I took specialized science courses in high school, like forensics and, like, wow. like, you know, botany and stuff. Like, so we did, like, things called, like, critical thinking analysis as, like, assignments, where we would get, like, research topics, and basically we would have to dive into it ourselves with, like, key terms and stuff like that. So we're kind of teaching ourselves, like, factual, like, information due to the whole entire like thing of like, there, it was actually based off of like one student coming and be like, oh, I saw this in social media. Mm. And because like somebody said this, so like you're a botanist, so it has to be true. And my teacher was like, no, like that's actually so not true.
Right.
So I feel like it's the way we absorb our information and like where we get it from. And also like the lack of like motivation or willingness to actually teach ourselves now, you know?
Totally. Yeah. I think also like, I feel science has just gotten more and more sophisticated, and it will only continue to get more and more sophisticated. And I think as it does, I worry that the average person does grow out of touch with the scientific process.
Yeah.
And so as we are consistently being less educated in science and therefore are already kind of being separated out as we become a more scientifically illiterate public, that the work that it takes to replicate a scientific result is growing more distant from people. And so as opposed to like, if you want to replicate this, the like theory of gravity, go outside and drop a ball.
Yeah.
Like, you learn pretty fast, right? And it starts to make tangible physical sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel a lot of science now, I don't know, I just worry because it feels like you have to learn so much first. There's such a higher barrier to entry that by the time you would be able to replicate a result, you're an expert in that field.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just worry that, I don't know, because on one hand, you should be skeptical of every result of everything that comes across your feed, right? On social media or on the news, anywhere that you get your science information from. But on the other hand, like, I think it's really important to have sources that we trust because you cannot feasibly replicate every single result that you find in order to verify that it's true. And so we have to have publishing companies and journals that are well trusted order to make sure that if you find something there, it is reputable. You can trust that it's true to the best of our abilities, that it's at least an accurate experiment, whether the conclusion is true, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those are peer reviewed, and therefore somebody has to be able to replicate those results in order for them to end up in that kind of publishing, like publication.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, I just worry like that maybe people also are getting the types of sources wrong.
No, totally. And I feel like that's something that the pandemic has like kind of taught us about where and who we receive our information from. Emphasis on who we receive our information from. Primarily because, you know, you would hear one thing from certain politicians who are supposed to be leading us in the best interest of population.
Totally.
And then the CDC will actually go, well, that's not what you're supposed to be doing right now.
Totally.
And who am I going to trust? You know, policymakers or actual scientists who has been doing research on this pandemic since the start of it?
Yeah. And also, why then are our policymakers maybe not listening to those same scientists?
Exactly.
Because that's a huge deal. In a lot of my classes, we do talk about how it's like, how do we get policymakers to listen to scientists?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we get scientists to want to communicate with policymakers even when they don't listen to us?
Yeah.
And so I have one professor that I'm thinking of who used to be on some type of panel or something. And she was meant to communicate science to policymakers at a somewhat more local level. It wasn't like in D.C., but it was still important, I think, at any level. And she did it for a while, as long as she felt she could. And then eventually just felt like you're talking to a brick wall.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, it's like, how do we break the cycle of electing people who won't listen to scientists and getting scientists who are willing to talk to a brick wall in the meantime?
I feel like that question is such a deep sociological based one.
Yeah.
Primarily due to how politics is too much in current day society intertwined within too many other subgroups.
Totally.
And not going to name which ones, but don't want to make it a little too, you know, political. But I think people can tell where I'm going with it, where science is so much easier to be denied.
Yes.
Now, because of those subgroups.
Totally.
Because science is not right. There's only one person who created all of this, apparently. So,
right.
So it's kind of like, you know, it's been rampant recently with those type of policymakers. And I think the only way, I've done my own personal research into this, and specifically with policymakers itself, and like the reasons why they have these types of behavioral modes and stuff. I honestly don't think half the policymakers that act this way, with spreading misinformation or like say they don't believe in the science behind it, actually mean it.
Interesting.
I think they do it because they know there's a gigantic population of undereducated Americans that will believe it.
And, frankly, a financial benefit to them in order to say those things.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there are plenty of companies and plenty of money out there for people who are willing to say things, whether they believe them or not, that make them seem like a reputable source supporting a specific thing, because people don't know who to trust and they don't know who to go to. And so if you have been reputable to people and now you're all of a sudden saying something, whether it's true or not, people might be more inclined to just kind of go along with it.
Exactly.
And so I think, there's definitely that there's a base, a substantial enough base of people that will believe it. And also the money that makes it worth it for them to do it.
We've seen it time and time again with lobbyists.
Absolutely.
It's unfortunate, though, because you're seeing people put their lives at risk due to the hand of misinformation, especially with science. And it's like these policymakers are following scientific guidelines and research, but they're promoting something completely different.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's a extreme disadvantage to, you know, society, having to live through a place where it's like science is such a progressing field. And, you know, my science education ended with the last course I just took, and probably it's going to end next semester with the last two courses I take based off of astronomy, you know, like, you know, I will probably continue my science career sociologically speaking, but it's not going to be astrophysics, that's for sure. You know, because I the last physics I took was like senior year. You know, that's just how education works. You know, once you get into college, if you're not a science major, you're going to take gen ed science. And unfortunately, science has progressed so far, like beyond gen ed science. You know, back then that might have been like okay. But now it's like, you know, I won't be able to find like the cure for COVID or anything, you know, like that's for sure, you know.
Yeah. I also worry in terms of policymakers and legislators and people who run the country, that I feel we have reached a time where they are, I don't know that there's a more polite way to say this, they're so old.
Oh, they they're like, give it 30 years, we're going to have like nobody left. Like,
they are incredibly old, and even more so, they are out of touch. Watching, I don't know if you saw the trial for Mark Zuckerberg when Facebook was doing something shady, I guess.
Yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah, like way back, right? Like this was years ago. But he was like having to explain really basic, like, social media, telephones, technology concepts to people who are deciding the future of how these platforms run. And so I think it scares me that there is so much money in it and there is so much misunderstanding, because how do we then convince people, or how do we then convince legislature to make policies that maybe more heavily police certain types of content, or maybe restrict less other types of content. And so I don't know, I'm fascinated in that, and especially as AI becomes more prevalent,
totally.
I am more and more worried.
Mm-hmm.
And so this brings us to our first segment. So we have a segment on the show you're familiar already called Should We Be More Worried About? And so through public science communication, through just kind of trying to like keep an ear and an eye out for things that people are worried about, I've compiled questions that I feel really target pressing scientific issues within the culture and community. And so my question for you is, should we be more worried about science skepticism and AI, or other kind of technological advancements?
I totally think we should. I'm going to be completely upfront here. You know, on my free time, I do watch TikTok. Sue me. like, what am I going to do? But just this morning, I'm not even making this up. I wish I was. I was literally, I just woke up, and my morning ritual is to go on my phone for the first 5 minutes to let my eyes open.
Honestly, shocking that it's only 5 minutes. I feel like a lot of people that I know, it's much longer. So,
well, I get bored after a while.
Understood.
but I went on TikTok this morning. I usually do my language, but I went on TikTok, and you know, the very first video when I open up my phone is a AI generated video of former President Barack Obama burping really loud with his mouth like agape, like. like it was just like a 3 minute long video of like a really loud burp, like obviously like that's funny.
Sure.
Love it.
Right,
but I've seen worse.
Yeah,
I've seen videos of people like make videos of like AI Joe Biden like do a speech of like him saying something like really controversial, like probably even like life threatening to some people.
Yeah.
Talking about serious like implications of war and like, you know, certain states in the United States being under threat, like stuff where people, if they saw it and they didn't like look at the news that day because they're at work or something, and they're just opening it up, and like they even like, these videos are all not just on TikTok, they're on like Instagram, Facebook. Like, you're opening up this app and you're going to click on the video and someone will be like, look what the president just announced.
Right.
And like these accounts too, like make it so believable that it's actually these individuals saying these things. Like they'll get the White House crest as their profile pic, or like, you know, stuff like that. Like, you know, it's kind of like really problematic, because if somebody just opened up their phone for the first time, didn't look at the news, like just haven't socialized, they sit in a cubicle for 9 to 5 type of thing. Like,
right.
And you're going to see that, like, New York City is going to get, like, attacked, like, and, like, they're on, like, 35th Street. Like, what are they going to do? Like, you know, I would honestly, like, I would panic.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the issue. It's not just that. There's, like, other things. Like, you know, there's people doing, like, AI, like, photos of, like, certain celebrities, like, doing promotions for, like, things. And, like, it's so easy. You just need a $12.99 subscription, like, for an AI generator, and like you can create whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like very fearful in a way, because you never know how far it can go. Because, like, it's, like, not even just in, like, science, but society speaking, like, your, like, arch nemesis can easily generate a photo of, like, you doing something really bad and, like, post it on social media, but, like, you, like, and, like, it's, like, you weren't there, like, you're on the other side of the country.
Totally.
Like, you know, it's like a, like, obviously there's ways to tell if an image is AI generated.
For now. Yeah.
But the computer works itself. Like, every single day, you know, technology is adapting itself, it grows itself, like, you never know what's happening.
Yeah, that is my biggest fear, is that I feel we are so currently in its, like, infancy, where the most that it's typically being used for are AI videos of Barack Obama burping, and that's all, right? And there's definitely, it's starting to reach celebrities, for sure, but I think it's going to be really scary when it starts to reach just your average person. And so, yeah, I mean, I've seen videos of people who are reputable scientists and sources who are being made to fake promote, like, content and products that aren't theirs, that they're not actually, they don't endorse, that they don't think are good, that can be really harmful. And so I think it's a scary time to be on the end of science, where you are just meant to receive it and filter through it on your own, where we don't have the science education to support people being able to know what is right and wrong, and to be able to prove it themselves, to go out and verify results, that kind of thing. And so, I don't know, it is scary, and it's scary to me that the people who are most in charge of that right now are the people who probably understand it the least. And so, yeah, it's a frightening time to be young.
No, exactly. And, like, to touch base, like, as you said before, like, organizations would spend, like, not even, like, when I say organizations, I'm not even just saying, like, you know, recognizable ones, like, that, like, everybody knows about. Like, organizations that could be, like, three or four people, or, like, local small ones, like, will honestly spend as much money as it takes to make an AI-generated video to promote their own case. You know, it's the use of persuasion. Like, they want to make an impact for their own benefit.
Totally.
And that benefit is the spread of misinformation. You know, like, it's trying to think of a word to make it sound like you can't even, like, reason with that.
Unjustifiable.
It's unjustifiable. It's problematic.
Yeah, like, problematic.
Like, stop being problematic. Like, it makes no sense, like, as to why, like, it makes sense as to why they're doing it, but it makes no sense as to why somebody will want to, like, logically speaking, go forth and create such a negative impact by it. But, you know, it makes sense in the sense of, like,
finances,
getting their own
reach.
Getting their own outreach out there. And also, that's what they actually believe in.
Sure, yeah.
So that's the issue. Yeah. So, like, somebody or something before AI was able to influence them.
Right.
And now they're using this newly profound generated technology that takes them 30 seconds and a click of a button to produce something that would have took them 5 years to produce.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I keep hearing talk from people who are in charge of some of the companies that are most currently, like, on the forefront of AI and new advancements in that technology, talking about how great this is going to be for being able to fill in, like, jobs and stuff. And I just, like, I can't believe that's being spun positively.
Yeah.
Because there's already such wild unemployment, and the types of jobs that AI can do for us, I mean, it would be wonderful to be able to give people more of their free time back, but that's not what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because I would love for AI to be able to do some of the like little tasks for me so that I could maybe work 4 instead of 5 days in a week.
Yeah. Or,
but that's not what's going to happen. It's going to kick people out of their whole jobs, their whole, all of their financial support for their families, for their households. It's going to replace people in the workforce. And that scares me because I love it for what it does. Like, I think there's so many pros and cons. It's hard to even begin to address them. That it would be wonderful for certain things. It's a wonderful tool to be able to start organizing your thoughts, to be able to try trip planning, to be able to try like meal prep stuff. Like, it's awesome for things like that. And it's cool to like be able to let something help you in that way, a kind of like assistant. But at the same time, it's like the part that it's taking over is the part that I feel like used to be for fun, and the part that it's not taking over is the part that's like work and like, I don't know. And the when it does take over work, it takes it over completely. Right. And yeah, it's a complicated.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. It's like, it would be beneficial if AI was implemented to do the quote unquote grunt work.
Right.
So professionals have the ability of doing the actual work.
Sure.
You know, and...
And to just be more creative, to have more time to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, if it was able to do, let's say, in science purposes, if we used, you know, AI to do the calculations, you know, right then and there, so a scientist doesn't have to spend so much time, like, doing the calculations for the research, like, you know, there you go. You just, like, spent, like, a month of work in like a minute, you know, like it helps them get to their case, probably helps them support whatever they're researching a lot more, as well as like, you know, let's say they're trying to find a cure for something, like let's say the next flu shot, like you have a better possibility of getting that cure quicker and being able to possibly save more lives that way.
Totally.
You know, and you get to go on your next research. You get to study the next flu, like, before it's even out, you know?
Before it's out. Like, before they release it.
Yeah, before the next release date.
Yeah. Like, I feel also, it's so crazy to me because I feel like AI is so bad at science and math, which is the thing that we would, I guess, anticipate that it would be the best at. So I feel like right now, like, if you, as a scientist, did your calculations through AI, for sure you're getting it wrong.
Oh, yeah. Like,
but maybe not for forever, though, which is the scary thing.
Yeah, and I feel like that's, like, AI with most things, too, though, now. Because, like, it's still such a developing, like, AI is so great at making videos and photos, but it like, immensely sucks at doing anything academic-related. Like,
yeah, totally.
You know, if you... Like, if you ask AI to do calculations or, like, provide some, like, proofread input on, like, a writing you did, like...
Sure.
It's gonna give you some whack thing. Like, it's not gonna make any sense. It's, like, you're gonna have to, like, redo it. And, like, it's just, like...
And what's the point,
What's
then?
The point of doing it? You're just wasting your time. Like, it's a... You're wasting your time for 1 minute, but, like, it's, like, all that work for, like, no advantage.
Yeah, totally. Well... With that being said, I hate to interrupt us here, but we're going to cut to our first break.
No.
I know. Don't worry, guys. We will be right back. We'll cut to our first break, so stay tuned. All right. Welcome back to WFNP 88.7 The Edge, Rosendale. This is continuing with Curiosities of the Cosmos. I'm your host, Allison Shuneman, and I am joined by Joseph, a senior and student of sociology and human services at SUNY New Paltz. Welcome back. Woo. We just had a very insightful conversation, I feel, about AI and skepticism with science. So we'll continue now with more on sociology. So I'd love for you to talk about it a little bit more. You briefly mentioned that you've been writing a paper, you're doing your thesis. Could you describe to us more about, like, what that work is, what your experience has been like writing your thesis?
Yeah, so writing my thesis, I have started to learn that stress does actually cause balding. I always used to think, that's not me. Could it be me? Little did I know, that is me now.
Oh, stop it. You have a full head of hair.
For now.
give me one more thesis.
Yeah, give me one more paper, we'll see what happens. No, writing my thesis has been a truly transformable experience for me, and not just academically speaking, but professionally speaking, I have adapted such a deeper understanding of my own research patterns, as well as the topic that I'm researching, which I find amazing. I used to think that my writing style was a little different from everybody else, like my patterns and techniques. But it turns out that in my thesis class, that everybody does the same exact thing that I do. So I felt like everybody wants to be me, but you know, that's okay.
They all took it from you.
Yeah, they stole my idea. it doesn't sound insane. I haven't slept a normal night for like the past 3 weeks because I do better productively, like at night.
Yeah. I totally get that.
Yeah, I've been writing my thesis every day from 12 to 4 a.m. And it's been going great for me, actually.
Okay.
You know, it's quiet. There's no distractions near me. I get to do whatever I want, you know. I don't have stress of having to be somewhere like within the next 30 minutes.
Right.
Like the only thing I have to do after is go to bed.
Wow.
So I'm not running on a schedule. I'm running on sleep. So it's a lot easier for me to work around myself. So I have time to, you know, I have a very active brain. So I allow myself, like, you know, I lock in. But I also allow myself to, like, look at my phone if I get a notification.
Right.
Because I have the time to do that.
Right.
I'm not going to stress myself out about that. But no, like, the research has been amazing. It's all analytical research, but it's, I'm not working specifically with any participants whatsoever in the work I'm doing. But, just, you know, I've probably read over 30 different academic journals for this thesis, and I'm only using about 6. So, you know, it's been such a transformative experience getting to get different perspectives and opinions from, like, different topics I'm researching. Like, you know, and different types of information as well. Some were, like, you know, data-based, you know, with participants, and some were other just academic, like, analytical, like, literature reviews, you know, so it's good to, you know, expose yourself to all those different types of, you know, information. And I'm kind of doing the same thing with this paper I'm writing at the moment. You know, it's a critical research paper, and it's just, you know, it's me. It's like more of like a literature review, but also I have to present a thesis as well. Luckily, it's not as long as my actual thesis. very short. But it's, you know, now that I've written, I would probably say my second thesis ever, it's helped a lot with writing this one. So writing my first one, like, you know, I would have thought after writing my first one with a topic sort of similar to the one I'm writing now, because I'm kind of running off a theme, it would have been so much easier for me. Little did I know, that's a lie.
Yeah, it's a lot of work,
yeah,
no matter what.
Yeah, so I forgot how much work it was until I had to redo it. You know, because the first one I wrote was 2 years ago for a capstone project, and now I'm redoing it again so I can graduate. So it's kind of like, it's really funny getting to re-experience things all over again. It's kind of like a little, what's it called? Nostalgic moment.
Oh, yeah. Throwback.
Yeah, my hashtag throwback. Yeah. Like,
no, I relate to so much of what you're saying. I am also in the thesis writing process at the moment. And I feel like nobody can prepare you for how much work it is.
Never.
If you are committed to doing a good job at it, right? Like, I feel like there are some people who probably just kind of throw it away as another essay that they have to write.
Yeah.
But I'm like, for me, I want this to really like be the culmination of the work that I've done.
Oh, yeah.
And I want people to read it knowing how much work I put into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, first of all, I just want to say super cannot endorse losing sleep over writing. Go to sleep. Get normal amounts of sleep, everybody. But I get what you mean. I think there is something about, like, we're both busy people. We have a lot of things in our schedule. Pretty much from the moment that I wake up to the moment that I go to sleep, I'm going from one thing to another.
Yeah.
And I guess a part of that is my own doing. Oopsies.
Sorry.
But I mean, I like being busy. I like doing a lot of things. I feel I would regret having not done all of the things that I signed myself up to do. I love doing them.
In the future, you'll never regret like doing it.
Absolutely. But I do get what you mean. There is something about your last thing on your schedule being done and just sitting there, and you can do whatever work you want to do. You could do whatever else that you need for yourself at that moment. And the world is just quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, like exactly that time period, that midnight to 4 or 5 in the morning. Yeah. And the world is just,
it's just silence.
Empty. Yeah. Yeah. There is something beautiful about nobody's messaging you.
Yeah.
Nobody's, like, there's no interaction that you're supposed to be having. There's no places you're supposed to be. There's no task you're supposed to be doing. Like, as long as you still get an appropriate amount of sleep, because sleep is important, I think there is something beautiful every once in a while about being able to just, like, sit in those moments. And I find a lot of appreciation for those as an astronomer, because that's prime observatory time.
Yeah.
And so I love being out there, especially those times where I was working on my research and it was just me.
Mm-hmm.
And at first it was scary because it's like, it's dark and you're in the middle of the like woods here, really. And we are, our observatory on campus is kind of like out in the middle of nowhere. And I'm just like by myself. But there is something really beautiful about just like taking a second when the world has stopped. There's nothing happening. There's nothing you have to be worried about. Nowhere to be, and to just like look at the stars, like sit like by a tree. Like I'm like, I love those moments to really reconnect deeply with nature. And I think maybe a part of why that stood out to you enough that even when I asked you about your thesis, like that's something you want to talk about, is because like that is something so deeply lacking in our day to day. Like we do not get opportunities to just like sit down, nowhere to be, nothing to be stressed about, nothing to worry about, and just exist outside. Like that does not happen.
There's always an expectation to be doing something.
Totally. And it's that like grind, like mindset, like we have to constantly be like hustling.
Yeah.
Where it's like, can't we just take a break?
Yeah.
Like I hear about these retreats that people are doing now to like go to cabins like in the middle of nowhere, but the retreats are always now like, at least the ones that I am hearing people talk about, it's like this like retreat to go like write, and you're meant to leave it with like a publishable piece of writing. And I'm like, so then how is that a retreat?
Like, and
like where's the like taking a deep breath and relaxing part of that?
And the funny thing about these retreats as well is they're all run on a schedule. Like they have a 7 a.m. yoga session and like 10 a.m. lunch. And if you're not there at 10 a.m., like you can't have lunch, you know? There is like no freedom.
It's just changing a schedule.
Yeah. You're getting yourself out from one schedule to like another one.
Yeah.
Like,
and arguably
no
maybe a nicer schedule, like maybe doing yoga in the morning and having that, like all of that stuff sure is nicer than maybe your like day-to-day schedule if you're like, if you normally don't have time to do those things. But yeah, what is the like, not being able to just like sit without a schedule. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's weird.
And I feel like, you know, it's kind of like to shed light, like, you know, since we're on the topic of sociology, you know, like, part of the social worker code of ethics is, you know, the right of self-determination, you know, like nobody actually truly has the right of self-determination anymore, you know, in society.
Wow. Yeah.
We're all stuck. Like our form of self-determination is defined basically on the premises of like the right to choose, like, you know, health care or like, you know, legal practices and stuff like that. Like,
sure.
You know, it was my self choice to come here, but, you know, even though it was my decision to come to school and like be a student, there's a reason behind it. You know,
right.
I'm like here because that's the only way I could make a livable wage that's like suitable for, like, you know, the economy now.
Totally. And there's so much more pressure then on going to school and doing it right. And you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I keep talking to adults, as in people 50 plus. and I won a scholarship this semester, which I'm so incredibly grateful for. Mm-hmm. It's been a wonderful experience. I went to a reception dinner for it,
Sorry about that.
Yeah, Joe was supposed to be my plus one.
I didn't RSVP myself. I got an invitation in the mail, and they said, since you're a recipient of a scholarship, please come to our banquet. You're invited. And I literally do not remember the name of my scholarship, so I couldn't register for it. So
you could have still gone as a plus one, though. Yeah. They would have still let you in the door. But you were asleep because you've been staying up until 4 in the morning to write your thesis. And I went to the scholarship reception dinner, and it's all like 50 plus year olds who are successful enough to be able to provide money for scholarships, which shout out to them because that was so important for me. And so they all were talking to me about how, like, when they pick who to give their scholarships to, they make sure that they feel like they've got a student that has their head on their shoulders, that they're really committed to what they're doing, that they're going to like succeed, they just need the financial help. And I was talking with a couple other scholarship recipients and a couple of the people who had given us specifically our scholarships, and they kept saying things like make sure, like, you really like want, like, somebody like told me to like stay out of trouble with the law, and I'm like, you have no idea who I am.
Yeah, you don't know what I'm doing after this, huh?
I can't even fathom getting in trouble with the law. I just go to class. And so, like, they were like, don't party too much, don't this and that. And I'm like, you have no idea.
Yeah. Do you read my essay application?
Yeah, to do all of the things that I'm doing. Like, I just don't have time for that.
Yeah, who has time to do that?
Yeah. And so, like, I have a boss somewhere who, not our boss, but a different boss. Mm-hmm. But I guess our boss has kind of said similar things to this.
Definitely,
but this,
definitely
don't party too hard. You know what I mean? Like, don't go out and I'm like, I'm just going to go hopefully sleep if I can, but if not, do work. And so I just feel like, I don't know, there is really just this pressure, and I don't feel it's on everyone, because there are definitely people who still do party and stuff. I'm not to say that, to say that our experience with college has been the only college experience that happens, right? But just that, like, I feel like it is so divided now. And I think a lot of people that do have the time to constantly be going to parties and to constantly be doing that kind of thing, to worry about getting in trouble with the law, that they are people who probably came in with their families financially supporting their college experience.
Very comfortable. Yeah.
Yeah, they're comfortable. They don't have to worry. They're not probably working jobs at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know a single person on this campus that I have worked a job with where we both have a job on this campus. And I've had many jobs on this campus, most of them at the same time. Where I have never worked with somebody in that situation who is able to go out and party all the time.
No, definitely.
And so they give us all these warnings at trainings and stuff because maybe that was their experience, and that's like how college used to be. But it's like, I just don't know how you can do the jobs that we do and also the classes that we're taking and also go out and party.
Yeah.
It's like there are just not enough hours in the day if you're trying to, like, prioritize your schoolwork at all.
Yeah, and, like, you know, just to clarify, we're not saying once in a blue moon, people. Because, like, I go out once in a blue moon, you know?
Sure.
Like, I, you know, and I do, like, you know, socialize with people when I'm able to.
Like, I'm talking, yeah, like, people who go out every
week.
Single week,
yeah,
like, multiple times a week. Yeah,
I have
free time and they're out.
I know some people that go out, like, 2 to 3 times a week. And I'm like, hello? Like, one, how are you able to, like, still be alive? And two, like, what's the point? Like,
right, where's the fun?
I'm like, don't you lose interest in it after a while?
Yeah,
like,
I could never.
I don't have time for my schedule or the financial means to be doing that type of stuff. But, like, I find it fun when I go out because I go out, like, once every month. It's my little social thing,
yeah.
You know? That's when I see people I haven't seen before.
Totally.
That's when we all get together. But it's, yeah. Like...
I'd much rather, like we got breakfast this morning before coming over here. It's like, that's good for me.
Yeah, because I use the dining
hall.
That's cool,
too. Oh, wonderful. All right. So with that, we're going to move to our next segment.
Ooh.
Our Curiosity Corner. So this is where I tell you fun facts and you rate how mind-blowing they are.
I'm so ready for this.
On a scale of 0 to 10. I'm so excited to do this again with you. Our first ones were so good. I'm hoping this can, like, live up to them. I am worried.
About the comment section, though.
Yeah, I'm so worried. No, I'm worried about the fact that you might already know one of them.
Okay. Probably don't.
So I put that one first.
You have too high expectations for me.
I don't know. So I did kind of call you out on a different episode, but I didn't say you by name, and now I'm going to say that it was you. now that you're here, because I don't want to talk about you behind your back, but now that you're here and I can say it to your face, I'm going to say it. I mentioned on the episode with Joe Rizzi, because I've had 3 Joes on the show.
Yeah.
With Joe Rizzi, who does elementary education and science, in earth science specifically, that I told him, I think at least, I hope I'm getting that right. Been a while.
Mm-hmm.
The fun fact about caterpillars and how they, like, become a soup of stuff and then reassemble themselves. Because you told me that you already knew that. You were like, yeah, they told me that in 3rd grade. I was like, what are they teaching you? So now I worry making this list. I was like, what do you know? I'm like, because I struggle with that because there are some things, like, I forget sometimes being in my major that not everybody learns the same things that I do in those fields.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I thought everybody knew about Olympus Mons, the volcano on Mars, being the tallest volcano in the solar system.
Beats me.
Yeah. And so I said that on, I think, the last episode before this one with Megan.
Yeah.
Megan Luby. That I thought that was something that people were just going to be like, we knew that, whatever.
Been there, done that.
Yeah. And now, like, people on campus that I know, because I'll have some people come up to me after the show and be like, oh my God, I saw this fun fact. I loved it, this and that. And every time it's a different one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten, like, 3 people who came up to me and were like, that volcano fact is so cool, this and that. And I'm like, I really got to assess what I'm picking as my fun facts and what people know and don't know, because I just, like... I don't know, maybe I overestimate and sometimes underestimate since you knew about the caterpillars.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. But I'm excited. I think you'll learn something. So this one, I hesitate to call it a fun fact because it makes
it's
me really
fun.
Sad. It's very depressing.
It's about sharks.
It's not about sharks.
It's about Sweeney Todd.
No.
Oh, okay.
So you'll be fine. Okay. So our first fun fact. There is an island of garbage in the Pacific Ocean that is twice the size of Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's messed up. Yeah.
Did you know about that already?
I did. Garbage Island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Great Pacific Garbage Patch, they call it.
Yeah.
Which is,
you know, there's one in New York City as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's actually a handful of them. Mm-hmm. So in almost all locations where ocean currents converge, there's trash that piles up in the oceans there. The significance of the one in the Pacific is that it's twice the size of Texas, and it's massive.
No, that one's insane.
Yeah. Fun fact.
Do you guys rate it? Do you guys think it's fun?
0 out of 10.
That is a 10.